everyone. My name is Carol King, and I'm an alcoholic. And first of all, I would like to say hello to everybody, but Allison and Steve, the new people here, it's the best thing that will happen in your life. When you find someone in the room that you can talk to, I know that when it happened for me, I was fortunate enough to just listen, and I was willing to follow instructions. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I knew that people knew better than I did, and people were promising me sobriety if I stayed sober. And they also said, wonderful things can happen to you. And I was always of the nature that I would say, what? Please tell me what wonderful things can happen to me. And they never told me that. They just told me that as long as I could stay sober, good things would happen. And I might have time at the end, if I have enough time, to tell you some of the good things that have happened to me. But my sobriety date is August the 5th, 1968, and I was sober 46 years this year, and grateful for that. My home group is the Young at Heart group. I started there many, many years ago, and I left for a while to join another group. My husband and I started the 512 group at one point. But then I eventually got back to the club, and I thought, well, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm here, there every week. I make the best desserts in town every week, and I love doing it. You know, I want to give back, but I do have to share something with you. And I promise not to cry, Mary Lou. You know, we do remember where we came from and all of the things that happened, and we take our first step. And a couple of days ago, I was talking to my daughter. And I'm not really going to go into exactly what we talked about, but she was telling me a funny story about what happened at Christmas time. But in so doing, she also related to me some of the things that were going on that particular year. Things that I didn't remember that I did. My husband, who was an alcoholic also. And I really didn't remember it. And when she was telling me all of this, she was just trying to relay a funny story to me. But when I hung up the phone, it was not really very funny. I felt sort of sad. And I really didn't feel good about it for a very short period of time. But as I thought about it and got past that, the most important thing that happened that I felt after that conversation was so much gratitude for being here that I didn't have to live like that anymore. And it's all because of those 12 steps. It's all because of all of you. And it just made me, in the last 2 days, more grateful for this program than I've ever been before. So we got the tears out of the way. Now we can start with the funny stuff. But it was a very, very emotional day for me. But it was also a very, very good day to really realize how wonderful this program is. And so I have to keep giving back to everything that's been given to me. When my friend asked me if they could tape the lead, and I said, yeah, that's okay. But it brought me back to the very first lead I ever gave was at the vet's hospital. I was a wreck, number one. And what I would do is I would take my tape recorder in my bathroom and I would tape what I was going to say when I got to the meeting. And when I got done taping it, I never gave it to anybody to hear. I never listened to it, but I did this for about a week in the bathroom trying to figure out the right thing I was going to say when I got there. And I happened to think about that when he was talking about doing this. Also, first lead I ever gave, I've gotten a lot better. It was an hour and a half long. You will not be here till 7:30. That was 45 years ago, and I've gotten a heck of a lot better since then. I was so nervous. The clock was right there. I was such a wreck, I didn't see anything. I was just such a wreck. And the meeting started at 7:30, and when it was 9 o'clock, I finally stopped. And the room was packed with people. And when the meeting was over, there hadn't been one person that got up and left. Amazing. Because they were all my friends, and it was my first lead. And they knew a lot about me, and they were just there to support me. They didn't dare get out of their seat. And you know what? They didn't really want to. And that was sort of a special thing for me. My drinking started in California. And I will tell you this also. Oh, how did I ever get back to Erie, Pennsylvania? That power greater than myself got me back here. Or I might be dead and who knows what, because I never would have come back from, I never would have gotten here from California on my own. My husband got here first. And he went to AA for a while, but he didn't stay. And while he was going to meetings, Jim W. sponsored him. He had left me and my four children in California. And about 6 months after he got here, he called me one day when I had had about five or six stingers on the rocks in a bar. And he said, why don't you come back to Erie and we'll start over again? Well, I was drunk and I had already been arrested for stealing a blouse from Kmart. And I was due to go to court, and I wasn't too drunk to remember that. I didn't really want to do that, so I said yes. But what happened with that was Jim W. had asked him, do you have family anywhere? And he said yes. And Jim W. said, if you're going to stay in this program and you want me to sponsor you, you better call that wife and those kids and be responsible and get them back here. I never knew that happened until about 6 or 7 years ago. And I really believe in a power greater than ourselves, and I don't believe that was an accident. Because this gentleman in the program who insisted that my husband call me, I would never have come here. I had nothing here. I had nobody. I would have just stayed there, and my drinking was getting so, so bad, who knows what would have happened. But in any case, that's how I found myself here. So, back to California. I was a real good girl as a kid. I never caused my mother any problems. I behaved myself. I found a boyfriend, though, when I got to be a junior in high school. And when I turned into becoming a senior, we fell madly in love, and I ran away and got married. Can you imagine how devastated my mother must have been over that? Ran away and got married. My husband joined the service. And by the time I was 22, I had four children. Pretty stupid, right? But anyway, I had four children, and we set up housekeeping out in California. And he was on his way to becoming an alcoholic, and I'm not telling his story. I'm just letting you know that he was just a little bit ahead of me. So we started housekeeping. I didn't work. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I didn't do anything. And none of that started till I was 24 or 25 years old. I drank until I was 28, so it didn't take me very long. We drank together. He drank by himself. I watched him drink in the morning before he'd go to work, and I decided it was a good idea because I'd gotten myself a job in a restaurant and realized that if I had a few drinks, I became a better waitress, I made more money. And how that all starts. It was so, in my mind, so innocent. I was a social drinker. I went out to drink with the girls. I mean, everybody did that. I had no idea what was going to happen to me, and it really didn't take very long, maybe a year or two. And next thing you know, I'm going out every night. I'm lying to my husband when I get home. I'm in the bars till 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I'm not getting into any trouble, but the pattern of drinking just progressively got worse and worse. I'm 25 years old. I've got four little kids at home and a husband that does nothing. So that's how the whole thing started. It only took a couple of years for that disease to get me, and it got me pretty good. Even before he left to come to Erie, I mean, he'd go out and drink and come home and leave the keys to the car, and I'd take the keys and go out, and I would party, and I was at a point where I didn't care if he knew anymore. And I don't really know, maybe after I came into AA, I realized that unconsciously, I had so much fun in those cocktail lounges. Oh my gosh. You know, the drunker I got, the more attractive all you guys looked, and I was just having a blast. But you know, I wonder if maybe, without realizing it, it was nice to be there and not have to think about changing diapers, taking care of kids, wondering what the drunken husband was going to do. And maybe all of that, it didn't play a part in my turning into an alcoholic, but it played a part in my having a heck of a good time. And I enjoyed it. A year or so later, the drinking's getting worse. I'm drinking every day, but I thought everybody did. I went to work in a very nice restaurant called The Lobster House in Redondo Beach, California. And that's where the fun really started, because these girls wanted to go out a lot, and why couldn't I go? There was nothing at home for me anyway, and the bartenders flirted with me and paid attention, and it made me feel good. And playing the jukebox, I had a blast. And all the time I was having a blast, the drinking was getting worse and worse. And after I got into the fellowship, I'd hear you guys talking about the morning drink. Well, I never did that. You know how we always have, I never did that? Well, I never did that. It took me a couple of years to figure out that on Sundays I'd work at this restaurant, and at 6 o'clock in the morning I would find a bar that was open, and I had 3 or 4 stingers on the rocks before I'd go to work. I would call that the morning drink, but I didn't really realize that at the time. I worked there for about a year. I went into the cocktail lounge drunk one day. You're not supposed to go in drunk or sober, and I was drunk carrying on in the bar. Well, the next day when I went to work, my time card was gone. Mine was the only one that was gone. And I got fired. And who do you think took the blame for that? My husband, the guy that owned the restaurant. What a nasty guy he was to fire me. It had nothing to do with the fact that I was drinking too much. I never realized or thought that I was drinking too much, even when I started to get into all this trouble. You know, it was always somebody else's fault. It was either my husband's fault, or so-and-so at the bar had a party, and if he hadn't had that party and bought those drinks, I wouldn't have gotten drunk. And you know, that old story, all of that stuff started to happen for me. Even before my husband left California, our life was getting pretty bad. In fact, we lived in a place, and he decided he didn't want to be a part of that anymore, so he moved somewhere else. And when he did that, my sister came from Northern California down to visit me. These were some of the things that I remembered. I had an upstairs apartment, and she came to stay for about a month or so. And we were partying. Now, you know, understand, I have 4 little kids, and they would stay in the bedroom. And we'd have all kinds of guys and girls over partying, and somebody lit a match or a cigarette, and the bedroom mattress caught on fire, and the cops and the firemen came and had to put that out. And during that same period of time, I know that I was partying more than I can remember, because the people next door were ready to call Children's Services to have my kids taken away. And it never dawned on me. You know, we don't pay attention to that. I wasn't paying attention to that. I just was living my life and going out and having fun. And what's wrong with having a little fun? After all, I had 4 kids I had to take care of. So from there, things really got bad, because when he left and came back to Erie, I was so happy. And I thought, now I can do what I want. Now I can... I didn't say I could drink the way I wanted to. Now I didn't have to answer to him. I didn't have to tell lies. I could just go about my business and do what I wanted to do. But he left and took all the money, everything. Emptied the panty jar, did the whole thing, came back here. He also got me to the point where I wasn't even calling my parents anymore, who lived about 30 or 40 miles from where we were, because he wanted all the attention or whatever, and I let it happen. But after he left, in Redondo Beach, there are bars everywhere, every block, everywhere. And so I had no money. So I would go into this bar first. Can you loan me $2? Because in those days, you could do a lot with $2. And that would buy milk and cereal for the kids. That's what they ate all day. And it left $1 for me as an entrance into the bar at night. I did that for about a month. I hit every bar 2 or 3 times. And finally, they got tired of the $2 bar. They quit. They said, no, we can't do that for you anymore. And I had to call my parents. So off I went to Ontario, California, and stayed with my parents for a month. Well, that didn't work because my father and my mother are social drinkers. I didn't know that was the reason. I just knew that I needed to get an apartment so I could do what I wanted to do. And my father, being a social drinker, you know, social drinkers measure the shots in a shot glass. He measured, do you want to drink, Carol? Oh, yeah, tall glass, tall glass, orange juice, and he would pour one shot of vodka in that tall glass. And I thought, oh, my gosh, okay. So as soon as he wasn't around, I would fill my glass up, and then I would refill it later. But that was a tough time, and my parents were trying to help me. But I decided I needed to get out of there, so I got an apartment in a city called Cucamonga, California. My God, there is such a place, by the way. And they have Cucamonga Gold wine that they make there. That wine, the only reason I drank it was because I was broke, and I swear that they must squeeze those grapes three times before they put that in that bottle of wine. It was awful. And also what I was starting to do was, we didn't have a washer and dryer, and what I would do is I would take all the clothes, and I'd go to the washer, dryer. You know I'm not going to sit in that place, laundromat, all day. And it was my day off from work at the time. I'd gotten another job. So I would put everything in the big things that, you know, do the rugs and all that, everything, darks, lights, I don't care, throw it all in there, and off to the bar I'd go. And that was the first time I started to have blackouts. I was trying to get back to the house quickly because the kids were there by themselves. And I hit a car almost head on, but I couldn't stop. I didn't want anybody to know I was drunk. So I drove home. And the next day, the policemen were knocking at the door and took me down to the police station and fingerprinted me. And I don't really remember how I got out of that, but I got out of that. And that was the first time I started having blackouts. And, you know, my life had gotten to be a real, real mess. The alcohol had really started to get to me. You know, I'm 27 years old. My life is over. I'm not paying attention to my kids. I'm not able to love those kids. And what started to happen was I got a job in a place called the Dry Dock up in Cucamonga. And the bartender even was trying to be nice to me and would try to get me not to drink so much. Oh, well, you know how I felt about that. Don't tell me what to do. I can handle myself. But I would get drunk every day after work. One of the bartenders would drive me home and drop me off. And I'd go in and pass out on the couch. My oldest daughter was 8 at the time. She took care of the other ones. She fed them. She bathed them. I passed out. And I would wake up at 12 o'clock and be mad that it was too late to go out to the bar and drink some more. Our thinking is just such a mess. And I was a good girl. And I am a good girl. But that disease of alcoholism took me so quickly to places I can't even imagine anymore. So when I'm working in this bar, there's a little old lady sitting at the end of the bar, probably about the age I am now. She was a little old lady then. And I would ask the bartender, who is she? Because she'd be so quiet. Well, she comes in every night and she gets drunk, quiet drunk, and away she go. But you know one thing that's terrible about her? She comes here and leaves her kids alone all night while she drinks. And I said, when I start drinking like that, I will never, ever do that. I will never, ever do that. And yes, it happened. The first time it happened, a couple of hours, they'll be all right. And so I went out and I had to see what was going on in the bars. I had to do all that. And then after a while, it just got to be a habit, and I did it all the time. I left my kids alone a lot, a lot. So things got bad at that restaurant, too. My mother used to come and visit me, and I would forget it was my mother, and I'd pour a vodka and orange juice at 10 o'clock in the morning, and she would want to know why I'm doing that, and she'd pour the drink out. And I have to say, you know, and I'm shortening this up because there were a lot of other things that happened. I had one dress I wore. That's all I had. It was a turquoise and white checkered dress. I was puffy. The dress was puffy. Big sleeves, short skirts. And I would get drunk and thought I was the sexiest thing alive in the bars, dancing and carrying on. And you know what, though? Never thinking about those kids at home. It was all about me. And it really wasn't all about me. It was all about the disease that had taken me where I didn't want to be, and I had no idea. I had no idea. So when that husband called me and said, "Can you come home? Can you come home? Let's start over." And after I'd been arrested for shoplifting, oh gosh, my mother worked in the department store, and I thought she was going to find out about this, and she'd probably never forgive me again, but she didn't. So I said, "If you send me the money, I'll come to Erie." So we did. I spent some of that money paying off all my bar tabs. Why? I don't know why, but I did. And I had one huge duffel bag. All my stuff and all my kids' things fit in that one duffel bag. And we came to Erie, and I still have that duffel bag, and every once in a while I go up on the third floor to get something, and I think about what my life was like back then. Found myself in Erie, lived up in the Baldwin Gardens apartments. I didn't have a car. I hadn't had a drink for about a month. And on my 68th birthday, my husband drops me off at the apartment and says, "Get out." "What?" "Yeah, get out. Where are you going?" "Well, I'm going to move in with someone who loves me more than you do." Now, I'm in Erie. I don't know anybody. I don't have any money, and I really want to drink. And so here I am in this apartment, and I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do. Well, he had been to AA a few times, and even though he was going to move in with this wonderful woman, he came back to the house a few times, and we went to a couple of meetings together. But then he finally ended up moving in with her, and I was pretty much by myself. And he used to pick up my kids every week. And I'd say, "Don't take them to meet that girl." And he did. And one Sunday, I thought it was the end of the world. It wasn't. And I made him take me over to the vet's hospital. I had no intention of staying in that meeting. I wanted to get down to that Seidenberger Club because I really needed to escape. I was going through a lot of stuff then, and I hadn't had much to drink. And I needed to. I needed to get there and do this. And I walked into the meeting at the vet's hospital, and I was hysterical, crying. And so I went back in the coffee room, and there were two guys, Jim C. and Joe Q. I didn't know who these people were. I am crazy. And I'm trying to get a cup of coffee, and these two guys said to me, "What's the matter, kid?" And I thought, how in the world would they know there was something wrong with me? I'm falling apart here. And so we sat in that room for probably 2 hours. They didn't ask me if I was an alcoholic. I don't think they asked me anything. But I was talking, and I was crying. And I didn't know what to do. And so one guy dropped me off at the apartment that I lived in. And all he said, and I forgot all about the Seidenberger Club. I was so tired and whatever. And he said, "There's a meeting up at St. Vincent's Hospital on Monday night. Why don't you come?" That's all he said. And so the next day, I was in my pajamas. My living room was probably only from here to there. And I just paced all day. I didn't know what to do. I just paced all day. I didn't know anybody. And all I could think of, and this is the truth, all I could think of was, here are two people who don't know me, and they acted like they really cared about what happened to me. And I know this is an AA meeting I'd be going to, even though I'm not an alcoholic. But nobody had ever really cared about whatever happened to me, probably my own fault. But they really acted like they were concerned about me. And that's all I could think of all day. And I thought, I'm going. I'll just go. I'll just go. Maybe they'll be there. Maybe they won't. And I went. And yes, they were. And that was my beginning. That was my beginning to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was an accident waiting to happen. And it all came because two people said to me, please come. We'd like to see you. And so I went. And I was the youngest one in the room, by the way. All the old farts had white hair. There was only one young person that was around my age, and that was Todd D., because he was sober 5 years at the time. And I looked around, I said, oh, gosh, at least there's one person in here that's young like I, and very few women. I wasn't really looking at that anyway. And so that was the beginning for me. And I started going to the Young at Heart meeting, because the same guy said, come on down. And I did that. And I still wasn't drinking, but it wasn't because I didn't want to. I didn't have any money. Didn't have any money to do that. So when I started at the Young at Heart meeting, I just sort of was there. And there were guys there getting sober like I was. Twiggy, Doug Ryan, five or six other people that only had a year or so of sobriety. And there I was. And I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I was just such a mess. Such a mess. And nobody told me I had to do anything. Just come on back next week. And I did. I mean, really. I had to be willing to do something. And I really thought, I'm not an alcoholic. I believed this. But I thought these people were so good to me. I didn't want them to find out that I really didn't belong here. And I really, it's funny now, but it really wasn't funny then because that's how I felt. And as I kept listening to people speak and reading things and listening to these guys talk to me, I still thought, well, maybe I'm half an alcoholic, but I'm not really a big alcoholic like the rest of you guys. Because Andy Daniels, who is now dead, would stand up at a meeting and say, sitting right next to me, well, I drank that canned heat and bay rum, and I was in the hospital 27 times and in jail. And how do I look at him, say, if he's an alcoholic, how could I be? I'm just a sweet thing, 28 years old, you know. And that's what I thought. It took a lot of going to the meeting, a lot of talking to people, a lot of things happened to make me finally realize that didn't matter. It didn't matter how long I drank. It didn't matter how much I drank. What mattered is what the alcohol did to me up here. Because we know that the alcohol is just a symptom of something else. When I finally figured that out, I said to myself, well, maybe, just maybe. So 2 months goes by, and Jim C. at the meeting one night said, let's talk. Okay, what do you want to talk about? Well, he said, do you think maybe it's time that you think about the fact that you think maybe you're an alcoholic? I said, honestly, I don't know. I don't know, Jim. He said, well, you're going to have to make a decision. You can either come through these doors and follow what we ask of you to do, or you can go back to that life in California. And I was dry long enough to know that that was sick living I had in California, and I didn't know how I was going to fix it, but I did not want to go back to that life in California ever again. And so whatever they told me to do, I decided that I better do this, because my life was a mess when I was out there, and I finally realized that. And it took a while for me to understand that, yes, I didn't have to drink for 27 years or drink bottles and bottles of alcohol. But alcoholism took me, and it took me quick. And I felt very fortunate that I was able to start somewhere in this program. And I feel fortunate, too, that I was willing to do whatever was asked of me. However, I'm sitting at the meeting week after week, and after about a year of just going to the meeting, they asked me if I would make a cake. The meeting was celebrating a year. And they also decided that I could wash the cups. There were only six of us at the meeting. So what's the big deal? What's the big deal about washing six cups? Well, it is a big deal, because I didn't know how to do anything, and I was not welcome anywhere. And when they asked me if I could do that, I felt that I belonged. I belonged there with those people. Because, you see, there were no women in the program to sponsor me at that time, one or two, and they were busy. And the people that sponsored me and helped me were those guys. They became my sponsors in that group. They watched out for me, they helped me, and they were my sponsors until I could find somebody else to help me. So when I was asked to wash the cups, I thought, wow, they trust me enough to let me do it, but they should never have trusted me to make that first cake. Because when I made that box cake, all it is, eggs and water, and took it to the meeting, it was hard like a brick. And I couldn't figure it out, whatever. And so they brought another cake just in case. And they did, really. And Ed Schlinwein, who many of you might know him or not, he used to tell me every week, you know, I used that for a doorstop, Carol. You know, it was pretty rotten. It was pretty rotten. So those guys helped me and along. And after about a year and a half, I remember sitting at that meeting saying, is this all that's going to happen? Am I just going to keep coming to these meetings and I'm just going to die? That's it? I don't want it to be just that's it. And the smart ones in the meeting said, then why don't you do something? Well, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? Well, you could try going to school. Well, I don't know what I want to be. Well, what do you want to be? I don't know. Maybe I'll be a teacher. I don't know. Well, you have to do something about it, so send a letter to Gannon. I said, doesn't matter. They're not going to take me. I didn't think enough of myself yet. I didn't have a lot of confidence yet. I was just sober, and I was glad for that. So I sent the letter to Gannon. 2 weeks later, I get a letter. You have now been accepted. I thought, they sent the wrong person a letter. They couldn't have sent me a letter because I'm not smart enough. Do not feel smart enough. And I called Jim, and I'm crying. He said, what the heck's the matter with you? I said, they're going to let me go to school. Can you believe that? They're actually going to let me go to school. And so I did. And over a period of time, I got my bachelor's degree in teaching. And I wasn't until I was 52 that I got my master's degree to teach special kids. And so that was part of what happened there. And then I was able to start sponsoring people and doing things like that. And after about 2 years, I met Kenny, my husband. I divorced that other guy. He was a bad guy. And so, yeah, Kenny and I met, I think it was about a year or so later. He came into the program a year after I did. And so we got together, and we started the 512 group. And things really started to go along good for me. But, you know, after I made that cake, not right after, because I had to give that a break. I did such a horrible job on that. But about a month later, as I said, I lived up in the Baldwin Gardens apartments on the third floor. And I said to my kids one day, you know, let's make a meatloaf and mashed potatoes. I probably felt better about it than they did. And one Sunday, we did that. And it meant a lot because we never did it. I wasn't able to pay attention to those kids. And you know, what AA was teaching me and all the things that were going on in my life and learning to follow what I was told to do in AA, I was starting to be able to feel good about myself. So I could give a little bit of love back to those kids. Because they were eating SpaghettiOs out of a can for about a year. You know, it was time to do something else. And so we sat down and we had a real meal together. And that was the beginning of my being able to start to do things for my family. That was part of what was happening. And so, you know, when they started to tell me in the beginning that good things were going to happen, what started to happen was I got an education. I started to do things with my kids. I started to have confidence and feel good about myself. Because from the story I just told you, you have to know that I was a mess. Like most of us, I was a mess when I got here. And you know, not all good things happen when we come into AA because we're people. But there's a big difference in us being here and being out there. Because in the beginning, when I was married to my second husband, he died of a massive coronary after we were married 7 years, but I was okay. I was diagnosed with breast cancer back then for a while, and I was okay. And you know, my mother got very sick about 5 or 6 years ago, And she died of a brain tumor. And I had to go out to her house and take care of stuff. And when I got to her house, the neighbor came over to be with me for a little bit because I wasn't sure I could stay. I really didn't think I was going to stay. I thought, I'll just get a hotel and then I'll take care of business. And I walked in and I cried a little bit. And then after I got settled, I made some coffee and I sat down in my mother's chair and I was okay. And the reason I have been okay with some of the tragedies in my life is all because of all of you. It's all because of this fellowship. It's all because of our 12 steps. Because I really believe there's nothing to me in this world, anywhere where they have what we have here. No matter how you're feeling, people understand. No matter what. When I was out in California and taking care of my mother's stuff, I would call a few people here in Erie, but I never, ever felt alone. I was never alone. So my husband and I still have a couple of minutes. It's not 8:30 yet. No, I'm just kidding. So when we started that meeting, there was no service in Erie, no general service. I mean, because service is anything. Service is saying hello to somebody, it's all kinds of things. But general service, there was none. And so we went to Meadville to find service. They had some stuff there. And then we ended up down in, I forgot the name of the city, where the area met. And we went down there and we brought some stuff back and we started doing things in the area. Well, my husband became the delegate to the General Service Conference for a couple of years. And then a few years later, they thought enough of me to ask me to stand for delegate too. And please, I do not say this because I'm bragging, because I'm certainly not. I was so, so humbled. When I went to the General Service Conference in New York, there are 90 delegates from all over the world that make policy for AA. Well, I'm not really sure I understood all of that, but when I walked in that room and realized that my area had voted to have me go and have all those people in that room, and I'm thinking, because I was sober, I think, 15 years at the time, and I thought, I can't believe this. From where I came, the mess and horrible life that I was leading, and all the horrible things I did because of being an alcoholic, and here I am standing at this place making policy for AA. It just humbled me so much. It was just wonderful. It really was one of the best experiences I've ever had. So I came back from that. And just a couple of things about the steps, because I do have a couple more minutes. Not all the steps, there's just one or two. The third step, turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Oh, that was a good one. I remember going to the meeting on Wednesday night with Twiggy and that gang, and I would say, well, I don't understand what that means. How do you know, turn your will over to life, your life over to God? What does that mean? I mean, how do I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do? I mean, God's not answering me. What's the story? And people put up with a lot of my silly questions. Finally, one person said, if you do the best you can every day, then you're doing God's will and you're okay. And one more step, that fourth step was a real doozy. I did not want to work on that step. In the book, it's got a big list. I said, that's for people that are really sick from alcohol. I don't need to put all that crap down on paper. I didn't understand it. I don't want to know. And Jim would say every week, do the fourth step yet? Yeah, I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. Well, that went on for about a month and a half. And finally, I said, I better do something about this because he's bugging me every week. So I got my own sheet of paper, and I listed the years from the year I got married down to when I sobered up. And next to each year, I can't believe I did this, I would think of all the things I did. And I would just put code numbers on them, X's and O's. I knew what that meant. And every year it got worse. Every year it got worse and more of them. And so anyway, when I finished it, Jim said one day, did you finish your fourth step? Oh, yeah. Here you go. Well, how stupid is that? There was nothing on there. How was he supposed to know what that was? And I was so stupid, I thought it was okay to give it to him. So I did that, and he promptly, obviously, handed it back to me. And I put it away, and what I learned from that, maybe 8 or 10 years later, I was cleaning out my closet, and I found that. And when I looked it over, I realized that the things I did started long before I took that first drink. So we know that alcohol, to me, was only a symptom of something more. That's what that four step showed me. And you know, this program to me is such a God-given program. And I probably don't even pay back as much as I should, because I think that we owe this program everything. And you know, even when I'm asked to speak or anything, make whatever I do, I think that this program is so important that I could never, ever pay back what's been given to me. And I think all of you must know that, because you know where I was when I first came to Erie, what a mess my life was, and how my life has changed so much today. If you ask any of the people that are friends of mine, Mary Lou will attest to that fact. I sponsor her. Basically speaking, am I not a very happy person? Yes, I am a very, very happy person. I have moments, do have moments, but I am. I get up in the morning and I'm just grateful to be alive and to be okay. And I think this program is the best thing that has ever happened to anybody in this world. And so, again, to the new people that are here for the first time, keep coming back. Don't stay away, because your life is just about to begin. This is the first day of the rest of your life, and it can be wonderful for you as much as it was for me. Thank you. Oh, thank you.